Hello and welcome to Tech Weekly, your half-hour telescope trained on the stars of the future, brought to you by The Guardian. I'm Bobby Johnson in San Francisco, and I'm standing in for Alex Kwiatkowski as we take a look at the technological side of this year's race for the biggest job on the planet. Yes, you might have heard there's a little thing called a presidential election going on in the USA, and over the course of today's show, you'll be hearing how the battle for the White House was fought and lost on the internet. We'll be speaking to some top experts about their ideas on the election, as well as hearing news and views from the crew back in London. So, strap down your ear holes, set your headphones to stun, and let's get ready for a real-life installment of Red vs. Blue. Now, for the past few weeks, I've been holed up in the den of free love and overpriced organic food that is San Francisco. But our very own Kevin Anderson has been out on the campaign trail, crossing America and following the election as it unfolds. It's been the most high-tech campaign in history, with the web, YouTube, and blogs playing more of a part than ever. But while Barack Obama has famously raised millions over the internet, he's not the only one who's turned the web to his advantage. John McCain has also made some advances, while failed Republican candidate Ron Paul caused a stir earlier this year by organising a vast army of his fans online. But what does it all mean? Kevin caught up with Andy Carvin, the social media guru for America's National Public Radio, to find out. And he started by asking him how the campaigns have been using the web.
There's definitely been an evolution this time around. The biggest trend that I've seen so far, I would say, has to do with just organizing of people at the grassroots level. For example, if you look at what the Obama campaign has been doing for some time and what Ron Paul did during the primary season, they were very effective at getting people connected through social networks so people could get together in two different ways. First of all, they could actually physically get together. So if you were in some small town somewhere, you could go to the social networking site and be able to figure out exactly who else in your community wants to have a meetup and organize local campaign activities directly with each other. Meanwhile, on top of that is the ever-important fundraising aspect of it. And so internet fundraising has become more important than ever and made it possible for the campaigns to get people to donate in smaller amounts but larger numbers of people. That's been a major point of the Obama campaign. And again, with what Ron Paul was doing during his participation in the process, he organized what were called money bombs. And the idea behind that was over a short burst of time, usually a day or so, he would challenge people online to donate whatever they could in a very intense fashion. And even though he never rose to the first tier of Republican candidates, he became a financial force to be reckoned with for a period of time because of those money bombs.
I think it was actually 2000, and ironically, John McCain after New Hampshire, who first started using the internet to fundraise. Mm-hmm. If money is the mother's milk of politics, how has it changed that dynamic?
Well, if you go back 4 or 6 years ago, even 2 years ago, the amount of money that was being raised online wouldn't really be enough to sustain a candidate all the way through an election. And now we've gotten to a point where Obama, in particular, has been very successful at getting people to donate online in small amounts. And so, whereas it might have not been very easy 4 years ago to have a candidate that really focused on grassroots fundraising through the internet as a major way of sustaining the campaign, Obama's been so successful at it, he reached a point where he was able to turn down federal funding for the general election campaign because he felt that there was enough money out there. And of course, it's not all online donations by any means. It's quite extraordinary.
How's the media adapting to this new landscape of social networking, microblogging, and new internet tools like that?
For the last 8 years worth of elections, there have been stories saying this election is going to be the year of the blogger. Well, it's always the year of the blogger, it seems, or the year of Twitter or whatever. In many cases, it's just simply because bloggers have become so prominent and there are so many out there now that they're impossible to ignore. And especially if you look at some of the bigger controversies that came out of the campaign this year, such as Obama went to San Francisco and talked about people clinging to guns and religion, That was reported by a citizen journalist, if you will, Mayhill Fowler, who was participating in a citizen journalism initiative. She's not a professional journalist, but took the time off to go on the campaign trail, and so ended up breaking a big story, but at the same time raised some interesting questions about how she should have been identifying herself at various points, and where do you draw the line between, are you attending as an activist, or are you attending as a journalist, and is there different behavior based on those differences? Meanwhile, you've got large numbers of people who are using YouTube as one of their main sources for current event information. It's certainly not the only thing out there. If you had asked me a year ago about what the role YouTube would play, I would have probably said I'd expect there to be a lot more macaca-like moments, as happened with Senator Allen.
Let me just interject. This was the last election, and Senator Allen was a senator from Virginia, and he used a term that was later interpreted as a racial slur. And someone from the opposing campaign happened to have a video camera at the event, and now it's entered American political parlance that these kind of gotcha moments on cell phone cameras or video cameras are macaca moments.
Exactly.
But you were saying...
Yeah, and so the campaigns have gotten very sensitive to it, and so they're much more aware of cameras being around at all times. I think that's part of it.
Is it becoming more difficult for campaigns to actually control the message?
It's definitely harder for campaigns to control the message because now anyone can be a messenger. It doesn't take much for anyone within a campaign or even just a random activist in a community to go create a blog and get involved and either stay on message or go off message. And so that's why you see the campaigns spending more time on conference calls with bloggers and trying to communicate with bloggers and figure out which ones are on their sides and which ones aren't, so they can use them as part of the communications machine, even though I think a lot of bloggers don't like to think of themselves in that way. And in terms of people getting confused by it, people are using the tools to fact check this stuff as well. Twitter's a great example of that. When something spreads virally online, people will start talking about it through the messaging system, because there are a lot of skeptical news junkies on Twitter who, when they see things start to go out there on a particular issue, they'll come up and throw facts back at their community and try to flesh out whether or not what they're talking about is accurate.
So when we look back on November 5th, and we have a result, what do you think the verdict will be on the internet's role in this election?
Well, I think people are going to look back and say that the internet played a bigger role than ever before in terms of organizing people at a grassroots level, raising money at a grassroots level. It added chaos to the way messaging from the campaign takes place, but also created new opportunities for new messengers to help get those ideas out. We still haven't had a singular moment on the campaign that's caused things to shift one way or another purely because of the internet. Maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't.
That was Kevin Anderson speaking to NPR's Andy Carvin, and you can trace back Kevin's journey across the US at guardian.co.uk/roadtrip, or keep listening for more. Before that, however, we're going back to London to hear from our own Jemima Kish, who's bursting to share this week's news with us.
Electronic voting machines being used in the US election are plagued with vulnerabilities that could wrongly record votes, according to computer professor Dan Wallach. Though there's a drop in the number of machines used this election, Wallach said that just one evil software patch could spread to other machines in the network and corrupt votes. France has moved one step closer to banning persistent illegal file sharers from the web. A proposed law has been approved by the French Senate and is designed to protect copyrighted films, music and games. MySpace is adopting new video ID technology by Auditude that says it will help resolve copyright issues and boost revenues from video clips. Clips will be checked against a database of 1 billion videos and ads added into copyrighted content on a revenue share basis. And the first of the Google-powered mobile phones went on sale in the UK last week through T-Mobile. Powered by Google's Android software, the G1 has been much anticipated by the developer community. But without the cool factor of the iPhone, it might take slightly longer for non-geeks to catch on.
Thanks, Jemima. There's a lot going on, as always, and you can read about all these stories and more at guardian.co.uk/technology. We've heard from a media pundit about the 2008 US election, but what about an insider's view? In 2004, Garrett Graff worked on Howard Dean's campaign to win the Democratic nomination. It was widely recognised as one of the first net-savvy runs for the White House. These days, Graff is an editor-at-large for Washingtonian magazine, and Kevin Anderson asked him what the role of technology and the net has been during this run for the White House.
This is really the first campaign of the 21st century that the tools that the candidates are using, like blogs and cell phones, that this is all a radically new landscape on which they are campaigning in this election. And that we really, I think, are beginning to see the outlines of how campaigning will take place in subsequent elections. And that it's going to be different from the way that we're used to.
So you worked with the Dean campaign. I believe you're a spokesman. How has it changed? Because the Dean campaign really was, broke through with that.
The big change is the arrival of online video. That did not exist in the 2004 election. YouTube, didn't really come into play in politics until 2006. This is a race that from its first moments was shaped by the arrival of online video. It was George Allen who in 2006 was considered the front runner for the Republican nomination. He was a Virginia senator, conservative, charismatic, well-liked, popular, and that he was brought down in 2006 in his re-election bid by a YouTube video in which he uttered a racial slur. And so, this would have been a very different race from its first moments if there hadn't been that one YouTube video. Ever since then, we've seen it used for and against candidates, and we've seen lots of voter-generated content, pro-Obama videos out there, and it's been an election that when we look back on this, online video will be one of the two most crucial tools in this election.
You talked about voter-generated content. Is that benefiting one candidate or being driven by one candidate over another, or are both campaigns benefiting from that kind of voter-generated content?
Voter-generated content, I think, in this election has been almost entirely a Barack Obama phenomenon. And the only exception to that is that since John McCain chose Sarah Palin, we're beginning to see the first awakenings of the voter-generated content movement on the Republican side in pro-Palin, pro-Palin-McCain paraphernalia, videos, bumper stickers, T-shirts, websites, songs, all of that type of stuff. It's just incredible to see the depth and breadth of the voter-generated content out there that's pro-Obama and anti-John McCain, and that is a tide that has only begun to turn in the last couple of weeks.
So the amount of voter-generated content that Barack Obama supporters are creating, does that represent the real level of support that he has, or does it mean that Obama somehow appeals to people on the internet more than John McCain does?
Barack Obama certainly appeals more to the types of people who are out there creating this type of content, the musicians, artists, the creative class, and that also Barack Obama is also has much stronger support among younger, more wired, more technologically savvy voters than John McCain does. Obama support is very, very strong among people under the age of about 30 in the United States, whereas much of John McCain's support is coming from older, less wired voters.
Is there any other technology that's playing a role in this election that's a bit novel, something that we haven't seen before?
Cell phones. The United States traditionally has not had a very strong use of cell phones in political campaigning. We certainly have nothing like what Asia or Europe has had, where it proved very key in the 2001 Philippines election or the 2005 Spanish election. But what we have seen in this election is that Barack Obama, has been putting a lot of resources into trying to build up a cell phone database to text those people, to get those people out to vote. So if you are actually trying to mobilize voters in the United States, the surveys done after 2006 showed that cell phones cost about $1.50 in terms of text messaging to turn a vote out, whereas more traditional methods of canvassing or phone banking can cost $20 or $30 a vote. So this is something that's 15 to 20 times more powerful than the traditional tactics that campaigns use.
At the end of the day, I you know, Howard Dean had an amazing amount of support online, you know, really caught the imagination of Wired voters. But yet he still didn't win the election. He still never even got the nomination. At the end of the day, does the internet support that Barack Obama has seen, the technical support, is it going to be a game changer in this election, or will it will we still have to wait till the internet elects the first candidate?
If Barack Obama wins this campaign, it will be because of the internet. I mean, he got to be where he is today because of the tremendous small-dollar online fundraising that he put together throughout the last 20 months or so that defeated the most powerful Democratic money machine in American history, the Clinton family. And so he wouldn't be where he is today without the internet and without online campaigning. And that if he wins, it will be because of his use of things like cell phones. It will because of his use of online video and voter-generated content to turn out people and mobilize people. I mean, I think that we are certainly in either the first campaign where the internet will elect the candidate, or we're certainly in the last campaign where the internet won't elect the candidate.
That was Garrett Graff, editor-at-large for Washingtonian Magazine, talking to Kevin Anderson. And if that's not enough to fill your election cravings, then don't forget there's coverage of the US elections and in-depth analysis at guardian.co.uk/America. Now, if all this talk of politics is a bit much for you, we're going to take a step back from the American elections now to find out what's been going on the Guardian website, and more specifically, what you've been saying on the blogs. Jemima and Charles Arthur are back in the studio in London perusing your pearls of wisdom. So what's been happening on the tech blog, Charles?
Oh, well, I've been entertained by some of the back and forth in a thread about Windows 7. Microsoft, of course, has been putting out a sort of pre-alpha of its new Windows 7, and it was giving out laptops, and discussion appeared about whether Microsoft was basically bribing people by giving them laptops. And this went back and forth a bit, and Joe H. finally came down and said, well, would you expect them to just hand out a CD with Windows 7 on it and say, oh, we don't care what rig you have, just crank it up anyway. If it runs like poo and you write that in a review, we're man enough to take it. That would be weirder, in my view. I tend to think, this is Joe H. still speaking, what I would do, and in this case, just presuming I developed a new operating system, I think I might loan out the hardware to run it on as well, especially if it required a high-tech spec. I'm not defending it at all. In all cases, I wouldn't expect games journalists to get a PlayStation 3 with every copy of Fallout 3, as that would be a bit obvious, but this is a special situation, don't you think? Operating system requires a particular hardware config, and Microsoft needs the reviewers to see it as it should be. Also, most people will upgrade to Windows 7 when buying new hardware, rather than buy the CD. So it's actually relevant. I think voice of reason there from Joe H.
Go on, Jemima.
Well, on PDA, I don't know if you remember, but this little company called Google released a phone last week. And though I only wrote one piece on it, somebody managed to go into the blog and say, I can't believe the amount of stuff you've written on the Google phone. But somebody has to do that. And Boeing wrote, well, it's not looking great for Google or T-Mobile anyway, and said there's nothing in the G1 that can't already be had in other handsets. Went on a bit of a rant and then said, there's no particular innovation, no sex appeal, and ultimately no unique selling point to either G1 or Android generally. Truthfully, if it weren't for the desire to find the next iPhone, nobody would even be reporting on it.
Not so sure about that one.
No, not so sure myself either, but...
No, we'd ignore it. You know, we'd make a big issue of ignoring these sorts of things.
Well, don't forget that you can leave a comment of your very own at any of our blogs by visiting guardian.co.uk/technology. Oh, and while you're at it, you can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook too. The details for that are up on the website. We're almost done for today's show, but before we go, there's enough time to hear one more view on the US election. We've already heard how one of the hallmarks of Obama's campaign has been his successful use of social networking tools to energize supporters. But are there any lessons there for future candidates? Kevin Anderson grabbed a few moments with Todd Ziegler, the vice president of electronic consultancy The Bivings Group, to find out what the impact of social networking has really been on this campaign.
I think it's been quite large. Basically, Obama, when he started out back, you know, when the campaign first started, one of the first things he did on his website was actually launch my.barackobama.com, which was an internal social network on the site itself, where he basically created his own Facebook or MySpace around his campaign. And basically that community that's developed over the last 2 years on that site is really kind of the base of his support, basically with lots of viral tools and lots of kind of an army of people that go out there, make the calls, do the walks, etc. In addition, Obama and other candidates have gone out on Facebook and MySpace and many, many other websites you've not even heard of, like eons.com, and basically have presence there so that, once again, they can kind of put their information on those communities and allow people there to organize around them too. So I think it's kind of a two-pronged strategy, building your own social network on your own site and then also participating on others as well.
How has John McCain been using social networking and a myriad of sites that have grown up?
He has much less followers than Obama. It just isn't as popular for whatever reason, demographics, et cetera. In addition, in terms of the internal social networking that I talked about, when the campaign first started, McCain had a function called McCain Space on his site, which was right at the beginning when he first launched his site. And basically, this was an entirely kind of phony social network. And what it would let you do is set up a profile. So I set one up. I called it debaser.johnmccain.com after the Pixies song. And basically, all I could do is fundraise. So basically, it created a little domain for me where I could point my friends and family, and it asked me to raise $400. And really, the only thing you could do is raise money. And they gave you tools to email your friends to do that. I could change like one bit of text, and that was it. There's no blog, there's no photos, there's no message boards, there's no groups, there's nothing really. And even creating that was actually went through an approval process, where people basically got approval, had the campaign looked and approved everything before accounts were created. That was up there for a year and basically got very little activity. Around a month ago, they relaunched McCain Space using kind of a third-party social networking kind of tool called Kick Apps that has user-generated blogs, user-generated videos, real profile, and the kinds of things you really associate with social networking. And it's much better. The fundamental problem, though, is what the brilliance of the Obama social network, internal social network, mybarackobama.com, is that it's about getting elected. There are groups, but there's also call tools. But call tool meaning that basically I can go there if I'm from Texas and download a list of phone numbers. And basically I'm encouraged to call the people that are assigned to me and tell them to vote for Obama. So the tool set on my.barackobama.com are about getting elected.
Wasn't there an early misstep with McCain when he set up his MySpace page? He was using a theme or something that he had used from someone else. Can you tell us a little bit about that? I think it was it got termed the Immaculate Hack.
Yeah, I think, I'm not 100% sure, but I think what happened was he used MySpace, obviously you can go download themes or even buy themes that you can use to kind of customize your MySpace. Basically, he used the theme, and I think he even left a few of the images from the theme on the server that he got the theme from. So what happened was the person that owned the theme and was hosting the image changed a few of the images to some anti-McCain messaging.
So you've said that, Barack Obama's social networking focus has been about getting elected. There's lots of tools. Mm-hmm. What role do you think at the end of the day on the 4th of November the Internet's going to have played in this election?
That's a big question. I think if Obama wins, I think you could basically tie it to the activity that the network that he's built online. He's raised so much money. He's got such a big list of emails, of text phones, of cell phone numbers, etc. It's amazing, and that's really been the catalyst of his fundraising and of everything. So if he wins, I think the postmortem will be that this is how you run a campaign. You basically build the social network on your site, and you basically build a community, and you let them kind of organize amongst themselves, run themselves. If McCain wins, it's going to be, you're going to kind of, people are going to be scratching their heads. McCain hasn't run a particularly aggressive online campaign, hasn't really engaged in a particularly aggressive online campaign, and it'll leave you thinking that, kind of like Dean in 2004, Howard Dean ran a very aggressive, successful campaign that hit a ceiling, and then basically the big boys came in and ran really traditional, and Bush won, running a pretty kind of top-down kind of online campaign. So I think it'll be interesting to see whether the kind of Obama distributed campaigning style can actually break through, or whether it'll be kind of the triumph of the more traditional method.
In Thursday's tech section with The Guardian, find out the date when scientists reckon computers will hit the singularity. That's when processing power makes them as smart as humans or smarter. But is it realistic? We ask if Blu-ray has been cracked and what's the effect if it has been. Italy is unconnected. The Italians spend the least time online than any other major European country. Why? Freyr Data exclusively reveals the winners of the Show Us a Better Way competition, the contest to build on government data that's now been freed up, and there's details of a low-power radar system that can see clouds and helps forecast the weather more accurately than ever before. It's all in Thursday's tech section with The Guardian.
Well, once the votes have been counted, today's show will either prove amazingly insightful or it'll sound like utter nonsense. I'm obviously hoping it's the former, but more to the point, I'm also interested to see if and when British politicians will start to take a lead from their American cousins and make real inroads on the web. Anyway, next week we'll be back to the hustle and bustle of the technology world, so all that's left for me is to say thanks first to our guests Andy Carvin, Garrett Graff, and Todd Ziegler, and then, as always, to Charles Arthur, Jemima Kish, and our intrepid man in the field, Kevin Anderson. I am, and continue to be, Bobby Johnson. See you next Tuesday.